Hey, this is Ashley with School and Life, and I'm excited to share that I'm hosting a webinar on Wednesday, June 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern with myself and Tatiana O'Haron called CEO Mindset to Advance Your Career. This free webinar will help highly effective women gain strategies to become successful career women by leveraging strategies of CEOs to help them amplify their voices and make real impact in their lives and career. If you are a woman who's looking to learn more about positioning yourself as an expert in your industry and getting paid for the value that you add to your organization, register today at ceomindset.mentor-me.org. Again, you can register at ceomindset.mentor-me.org. This free webinar is going to be jam-packed full of strategies to really help you leverage the knowledge and mindset and positioning of a CEO in your career right now. If you know that you are an expert who isn't getting paid or isn't getting the visibility of one, this is a webinar that you'll want to be at. Again, register today at ceomindset.mentor-me.org. Hey, this is Ashley.
Hey, this is Marcy.
And this is School and Life, a weekly podcast about life, love, and occasionally libations. Make sure you check out our website at schoolandlifepod.com. That's SCHOLINLifePod.com. There you can learn more about the podcast, more about Marcy and I. You can read our blog and so much more. Don't miss having an opportunity to be a super fan and check out our website at schoolandlifepod.com. So this week in Mentor Moment, I talked a bit about the fact that we are halfway through the year. Literally, when we're recording this episode, it's June 15th, and we're halfway through 2020. And I know for everyone, this year has been a blur. But it is so important if you are a woman in the world of work that you are checking in with your supervisor and at least at minimum scheduling monthly one-on-ones to talk to your boss about what's going right in your career, what's going poorly, and what you can do better to advance your career right now. I know I'm seeing a lot of tweets and comments about, you know, throw 2020 away. I'm ready for 2021, you know, but I really want to encourage you that 2020 is not over. We have a half a year left. And I know Black women in particular have just been traumatized this year on so many fronts. But I think that one of the ways that we can take care of ourselves is by advocating for ourselves, particularly in work. We spend more time at work than often we do anywhere else. And now that so many of us are working from home, we're still spending time away from our families at our desks, closed in the closet or in a corner of the room trying to get our work done. And so if the best you can do is advocate for yourself to your supervisor, ask for what you want and get the most out of your life and career, I really want you to do that. And one of the first steps is scheduling a one-on-one with your supervisor. But maybe you're asking, okay, Ashley, I get it. You've convinced me. I'm going to meet with this person and chat with them. But what do I chat about? What do I even need to talk about? How do I lead in this conversation? And this week's post, which is not my standard video, it's a career strategy this week. But I share three important questions or topics to discuss at your June one-on-one. So if you haven't had that one-on-one yet, go ahead and schedule that. Reach out to your supervisor, reach out to their administrative assistant, whatever you got to do to get on that calendar. And check out the latest post to understand clearly what the three topics you should be discussing. And one that I really want to just dive into here on this week's episode is compensation and resources. So often I hear before working with me, my mentees are feeling overwhelmed. They're feeling overworked and underpaid. They're really frustrated in their careers, and they're not getting the level of support or resources or compensation that they need to do their job as well. If that sounds like you, if that's something that you're struggling with, the first step is scheduling a meeting with your supervisor, and not necessarily in that first meeting asking for the raise, but definitely positioning And leveraging that meeting and using it as a launch pad for setting up a compensation conversation that might happen in your next one-on-one. And so, you know, when it comes to leading and advocating for yourself at work, there's no way that you're going to meet your supervisor's expectations if you don't have the resources that you need, if you don't have the team that you need, if you don't have the budget that you need, if you don't have the visibility that you need, if you don't have the compensation, the salary that you require. So I want to make sure that you are getting that and that you are advocating for yourself in your one-on-one with your supervisor in June. In this week's episode, we talk meeting your partner's parents, the good, the bad, and the oddly uncomfortable. Meeting the parents can be a big milestone in most relationships, and getting it right is key to establishing good rapport in the future of the relationship. However, learning about where your partner comes from, the family stories, and learning things that you never knew can be awkward. So listen as Marcy and Ashley talk about meeting their partner's parents, how to prepare, what happens when things go left, and what we learn from meeting the parents. So Marcy, how did you first meet your partner's parents, and how did it go?
So what's interesting about our relationship dynamic is that we were friends and introduced to one another prior to actually dating. So I was in a very low stakes environment when I first met his entire family, which was pretty awesome because I really just got to be myself and there was no like interest in one another. We weren't trying to impress family members or anything like that. And so it was just such a, it was just a really chill environment. So I met them actually several years, his entire family, legit several years before we even started dating. What about you, Ashley? When did you and how did you first meet your partners?
I love that you had this very sort of low stakes, like no big deal kind of introduction because you all were friends. That was not my experience. My experience felt very much high stakes. I met my partner's parents on like a trip back home. So he was going back home to visit family and invited me. And so it was an opportunity for me to sort of see where he comes from and learn more about his family and where he grew up and how he grew up. And, you know, the people who see the people who care for him, see, you know, where he went to high school and, you know, where his, you know, parents met and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, and, you know, when we met in their home. So it was like, you know, on their territory, on, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, it was as intimidating as you might imagine, but went really well. I had an opportunity to, you know, speak with them over the phone several times before meeting in person. So that was really nice. It wasn't like the first time, you know, that we'd ever met, and it wasn't like, you know, like they'd never heard of me, like I wasn't a secret or anything. So that was really nice, but just as intimidating as you might imagine, right, as you see in the movies. And I think my very first impression was that, oh, they're exactly how like you describe them, or they're exactly how I envision them based on my previous interactions. You know, so, you know, very loving of their son, like really supportive of him, really Southern and sweet in the way that Southerners are, but also, you know, that like nice, nasty thing that Southerners have going on, that like, oh, I'm a pray for you thing, but not really pray for you. That whole thing, you know, that Southerners are known for. And so I love that. And I'm grateful to have, you know, had the opportunity to meet them. And my first impressions were like overwhelmingly positive. And I was excited that they were. In fact, meeting my boyfriend's father in particular was great because my boyfriend had, you know, previously described him as like this quiet, solemn man. You know, he doesn't really talk to anybody. He doesn't really engage. But that wasn't my impression at all. Like we talked, we laughed, we swapped stories. And so that was really great because it gave me an opportunity to get to know him and, you know, in a different way than my partner had described him, which was really nice, right? Because, you know, being able to connect with someone's parents on a more personal level is great. So Marcy, what were your first impressions? You know, maybe at that first like low stakes meeting where you just kind of got to know his family, or even beyond that when you met them on the girlfriend side of the table.
So my first impressions of them were just that they were very family oriented for sure. So that has been consistent throughout. They have always been a big family and being very loving and caring towards one another, very faith-based, which is another thing that just has always been consistent throughout. But I just could tell that they had so much love for one another and so much care for one another. And just the family was extremely important for them. But I wouldn't say that I necessarily learned anything about him that was not, that I didn't know before, because I don't know that I necessarily was paying that kind of attention or even thinking about like what I did or did not know or what I should or should not be looking for. So I'm sure that I probably did learn something about him that I didn't know, but at the time that just wasn't at the forefront of my mind. So maybe not. But what about you? Do you feel like you learned anything in meeting your partner's parents that you didn't know about them before?
Yes, absolutely. It's so funny because I feel like, you know, when you're sitting around with someone's family and they're sharing stories about that person and they're sharing stories about how they grew up and what they loved and, you know, what they cared about, you start to sort of see a different side of them. And, you know, I got to learn more about, you know, how he was in high school from one of his good friends. And I got to learn about, you know, how he was like a daredevil and a risk taker from his father. And I got to, you know, learn about how he was a good big brother from his sister. And so there was sort of this, oh, like uncovering these stories, like sure, these are things that he could have told me, but hearing them from people who loved him, people who are the other side of the story or the other part of the story was really meaningful to me. And I really love that. And it was just great to sort of hear those stories from the other side, which was really nice. And I feel like I learned that, you know, how he sees himself is pretty accurate, but there was definitely some stuff that he left out. And so it was great to talk to his family, right, and get the other side of the story, because I feel like I wouldn't have had it otherwise. But I think that they're, you know, when you're meeting someone's parents for the first time, there's definitely things that you probably want to be thoughtful about, or you probably want to consider avoiding, particularly like if you know that that's a touchy subject for them. So for example, Marcy, you know, you talked about the fact that your husband's family is very religious, right? And that's a consistent part of them. So going in and sort of challenging their faith in a way that might feel attacking to them or something like that could be really problematic. Or, you know, like going in and, you know, for like my boyfriend's family talking about, you know, oh, like, you know, I don't really value the South, or, you know, I grew up in the Midwest and it's better there, blah, 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 blah. Like that can be really offensive. So I think that if there are things that, you know, they are strongly held beliefs in your partner's family and you kind of go in demolishing those, I think that can be problematic. Now, obviously if they're just downright hateful or racist or something like that, like there's no two sides to those stories. So you really gotta nip that in the bud or have a really challenging conversation with your partner before you even meet them. But on the other hand, I think that if there are things that are, there's a, just a differing of opinion, I think that you might want to avoid bringing those up, at least in the first meeting. So how about you, Marcy? Are there topics that you think are important to avoid when meeting the parent?
So I wouldn't say that there are topics per se to avoid when meeting parents and siblings. I think that it is appropriate to be timely about certain conversations that you have for sure, but I wouldn't necessarily say avoid it. I also think that a lot of times, especially particularly in Black families, they come with the questions and they come with the topics. And so you kind of have to be prepared for whatever comes up. But we're also in 2020, and I hope that people are learning about boundaries and that you don't have to perform or be obligated to answer any questions that people ask of you, while also trying to be respectful. Like, you are, of course, wanting to make a good impression. because their family matters, they are going to be a part of your life if you continue to have a relationship with them. And so, of course, you want to have a good experience with them, but you also want to be authentic and let them see who you are and let you get to see who they are. So having those important conversations are valid and necessary, but that does not mean that you have to avoid certain things. If you know that you can't have a conversation without blowing up and getting mad and yelling and cursing at somebody, then maybe, yes, that might be something to avoid. But I don't know that there are absolutely specific topics that you want to avoid. And I think that the way that you do that is finding that balance. You find the balance between being honest and speaking your truth while also making sure not necessarily to not offend someone, because you can't always control whether or not you offend them. But I do think that tone plays a really big part in how people receive messages and how you communicate messages. And so you can be true and authentic and saying what you believe and standing up for whatever it is that you believe in, but you can also say it in a way that is that can be taken in doses and that it can be heard and understood. And I think that's with any conversation that you have with someone, the way that you say it matters. And so when you're thinking about how do you show up fully and authentically and be true and honest with yourself and with other people, is the way that you're saying that harsh? Is it with a sword? Like, are you slicing across people? Are you being rude? Like, those are very real things, and I think that people know the line between those things. Of course, not like allowing people to just be disrespectful to you either. I still don't think that that's appropriate regardless of what situation you're in, but definitely just being mindful of how you show up and how you engage, and recognizing that there's a time and a place for everything. And I think that we do a very good job, particularly as professional women who are in their late to early careers, like, we know how to navigate different environments. And I feel like meeting families are the same thing. Like, the same way you wouldn't just be dancing on top of tables in your office, you're not going to be doing that in a, hopefully never when you're meeting the parents and the siblings, but definitely not in a first meeting. Maybe ease and baby step into some of that. What about you, Ashley? Like, how do you feel like people can balance authenticity and respect in these situations?
Yeah, I mean, I really think that I love when you talked about boundaries. So you want to be absolutely authentic, right? Like, you want to share who you are and share your personality. People can read fake a mile away. So you don't want to come up in there like acting like holier than thou when you know you're not, or acting like you're a saint when you know you're not, or acting like you're a wild child when you're really, like, you know, a square. Like, it's fine. You can absolutely be authentic. But yeah, absolutely. It's sort of that respect, and particularly depending on where your partner's parents are from. Let's say that your partner is from the islands, you know, that they might have different understandings of what, you know, you are supposed to do, what your role in the family is, or what your role in the relationship should be. Or, you know, I know Black families, they love to comment on your weight or when y'all gonna have babies and when y'all gonna get married, and asking you intimate details about y'all relationship that maybe you're not ready to share. So you can set a boundary and say, hey, you know, we just haven't decided to share that, or we, you know, that's not a place where we're at right now, or, you know, that's a bold question. You know, you can sort of be authentic and like, hey, we're not sharing that, and I'm not going to give you those details, while being respectful. I love what you talked about as it relates to tone too, Marcy. Like, you know, I believe that you can do things in a respectful and in an engaging tone, in a way that like engages and brings people together. It doesn't point fingers and say, hey, you did this wrong, you did this bad, you're wrong, you're bad, but more, hey, like, you know, what you said was a challenge to me, or, you know, that, you know, that, I mean, even vulnerability to say like, hey, that really hurt my feelings or whatever. Like, I think I love having those kind of conversations, because I think it brings some humility to the space. And I think that like, when things get tense, that's the thing to do, like practice some authenticity, practice some vulnerability. Don't be afraid to apologize. And honestly, don't be afraid to say, I need to step away, or hey, can, you know, honey, can you and I step out? Or, you know, like, hey, can you talk to your sister, your mom, your uncle who said something out of the way to me? I think really using your partner as a mediator is really important, because you don't want to be the one doing that. Like, if there's a tough spot that's their family and you really want to let them lead, is my opinion, rather than sort of going at it alone. So what about you, Marcy? Like, what happens when things get tense? What happens when there's a tough conversation? How do you navigate that?
So I would say when things get tense to, man, that's a really tricky question, because it kind of depends on what the situation is. And it actually kind of, I know we talk about Insecure all the time on the show, but it kind of reminds me of that scene in Insecure a couple of episodes ago where Molly was interacting with Andrew's brother and having this conversation about whether or not it was race related, or if it was just something that she could let go, and how he just wasn't understanding, and yada, yada, yada. And that we can honestly say the things got really tense. And so what I would say don't do is offend everybody involved by blanket statements, because that's generally not helpful. If you are in a space, you can try to de-escalate the situation to say, you know what, I'm noticing that things are getting a little tense right now. Is it okay if we just table this conversation for a later time? Because typically the people that it's tense around, especially if it's getting more heated, a lot of times it's not a productive conversation. It's not going to be anything except for yelling and fussing and fighting, which is probably not helpful for the first time that you're meeting someone's family. And so if there is a way for you to be the bigger person, because sometimes you do have to be the bigger person, to just de-escalate the situation and not continue to add fuel to the fire. But also the hope is that your partner would be able to support you and help you out in that as well. Like, I can't imagine being in a situation where I am like fussing and fighting with my partner's family and he doesn't say anything and he doesn't try to step in. And so if you need to look over to the person who is a part of this family and be like, hey, help, like give them the signal, the eye, whatever it is, to have them to step in, but excuse yourself, walk away, let it go. It's not worth it, especially if you are wanting to continue to pursue a relationship with this person. If family is important to them, you probably want to do everything that you can to de-escalate. And again, going back to the authenticity and respect, that doesn't necessarily mean that you submit, or you like grovel at someone's feet, or you just completely disregard and minimize what your experience is, but definitely being very cognizant of how you move forward, that you don't always have to be right, that if they are not understanding your perspective, or if they're saying things that are hurtful to you, like you don't have to stay in that situation, but that you can excuse yourself and you can seek support from the person who brought you into this situation. And I think that actually, like, that plays a really big role in how to make the most of spending time with family and fostering those healthy relationships going forward. Because one of the things that, like, first impressions are real, and the way that people engage with you and the way that you set the stage for people to show up in relationship with you from the very beginning really does speak volumes to how that is moving forward. And so you definitely want to make sure that you're clear about who you are and how this conversation is going to go and what is going to happen moving forward in the future. If you come into a situation being tense and on guard and argumentative and just wanting to just like fuss and fight and bicker the whole time, they're likely going to continue to expect those same things from you. And so making sure that you are putting best foot forward, that you are being authentic, but you're also showing them who you are and who you're going to be throughout the remainder of that relationship. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't change, but that first meeting really does say a lot about how you all move forward. And of course, there are ways that things will change and things will shift for people, and you, as they continue to learn more about you, like the relationship dynamics will also change in that way. But it's something like, whether it is stereotypical, whether it is a societal pressure, when we go into these new meetings, we do try to think about what it means to foster a healthy relationship. And just like when you go into the romantic relationship that you're already in, you're also very intentional about your behaviors and what that means. And so getting to know someone's family, I think, is very similar to fostering a healthy romantic relationship in general, especially if that's someone that you're planning to spend the rest of your life with, because they will definitely, the family, regardless of how close they are, how far away they are, a different state, whatever, that family is going to continue to play a role in the relationship. So you might as well try to get it off on a good start. What about you, Ashley? How do you make the most of these first meetings to foster a healthy relationship moving forward with your
partner? I think the biggest thing you can do is just like not put too much on it, right? Like, you don't want to get so overwhelmed that you're like completely overwhelmed and frustrated and shaken and crying. Like, yeah, like meeting a person's parents, meeting your partner's parents is a big deal. Like, it is, right? And you want to make a good first impression. But you might trip, you might fall, you might say something stupid, you might swear, which I did. I like cursed out loud in front of my partner's parents, and I was so embarrassed. But we were watching TV and something caught me off guard. You know, motherfucker just slipped out. I couldn't help it, right? And so like, yeah, like I think that you might do or say something that you don't mean. You might not make the best quote unquote first impression, but I think that, you know, just don't put too much on it. Hopefully you have other opportunities to meet them. Hopefully you can continue to foster the relationship after that first meeting. And hopefully you can really leverage your partner to become a shield. Like, they'll know when you guys need to get out the house, or when, you know, maybe this conversation needs to end, or, you know, kind of introduce you to them in a different way, or, you know, change the subject in a way that highlights you and highlights your strengths. So really leaning into them, I think, is really critical. And you know, I joke often that, like, you know, parents love me. Like, I'm a great, you know, parent girlfriend. Like, they love me. You know, I'm smart, I'm accomplished, I'm pretty, you know, I, you know, love God and my mama. You know, I check all the boxes for most parents. But even still, it can be intimidating. So if that is something you're struggling with, we definitely hope that these strategies helped. And if so, let us know. We want to hear from you. You can feel free to email us at hello@schoolandlifepod.com. That's hello@schoolandlifepod.com. You can also hit us up on social at School and Life Podcast on Instagram. That's at School and Life Podcast. We want to know if this was helpful, and we digress. So next up is All Black Everything. Marcy, what do you have for us this week?
Struggled to figure out what to touch on, what to highlight. I feel like there's so much going on in the world, and so many things with Black folks in general. We have more deaths, more police brutality, more reasons to scream out Black Lives Matter, and it's getting closer to home. So most recently, happening in Georgia, happening in Florida. Like, there's so much that's happening in the world, and just all the people trying to push, like, Black things that we're not asking for. So, like, we're asking for defunding the police or police reform or all of these things, and instead y'all are giving us Black bachelors, and Starbucks are making Black Lives Matter t-shirts, and all of these books that people are reading, and just so many things that feel very superficial and very unhelpful, to be quite frank. And so I was torn about what I really wanted to share, because on one hand, I really wanted to say something very like fun and uplifting, but I also wanted to share something that was relevant and timely. But one of the things that came across my timeline, across conversations with other clinicians, is a death that I thought was just something poignant to talk about that's actually not necessarily related to the current conversations. And it is from the This Is Us, one of the This Is Us writers. She also wrote on What Men Want. Her name is Jazz Waters. And she died by suicide on June 9th. She was 39 years old. And I thought it was important to just shout her out and acknowledge her, acknowledge this loss, one, because I still think that mental illness and suicide and just challenges related to mental health continue to be very unspoken of in the Black community. And I definitely think that there's a push for it more now, but it's still something that gets kind of pushed under the rug and not really talked about. And she was also a creative, right? Like that, the storyline is always, oh, well, they must, you have to look like this to be depressed, or you have to be this way to be suicidal. And like, there are all of these, quote unquote requirements that people assume when we're talking about depression or talking about suicidal ideation. And this woman definitely, like, she was very well named, very well known. She did a lot of good work. She worked on some of our favorite shows. She was very influential for some of our favorite stars and the people that we look up to, and was still in a place of depression where she did not want to live anymore. And so I just think it's so important, especially right now with the world just being so scary and so sad and so isolating and lonely, that we really be intentional about our mental health and really be intentional about the people who love us and that care about us. And I don't want to do the whole, like, reach out to your strong friends, check on this person, check on that person. I don't know what that necessarily looks like. I definitely think that reaching out and checking on people is important, but I also don't think that it's to say if you don't reach out to someone, then that means that you are being a bad friend or you're not doing the right thing. But I just think that it's important to be intentional, and there's no stock response to everyone. Like, there is something that maybe you know that you can do, and do that. And even if that means like taking care of yourself and reaching out to people or doing whatever that looks like, going to therapy, maybe reaching back out to your therapist if you haven't talked to them in a long time, like whatever that looks like for you, do that thing. But know that right now is not the time to withdraw further in if that's not your method of coping. If your method of coping is being around people, if your method of coping is needing people, please reach out to people. Please take whatever it is that you need to be able to get through to tomorrow, to the next day, to whenever that next thing is, because people are struggling right now. And I think that it's okay to struggle, and it's important to thought. And I want us to be so healthy right now, because it's rough out here in these streets for a variety of different reasons. And I just want everyone to be happy and healthy and whole. And so I hope that Jazz's story, while it's heartbreaking and devastating, it also sheds light on a topic that I think needs to constantly be being talked about over and over again, so that we can be doing what we need to do to advocate for people's mental health and make sure that we're taking care of ourselves.
Thanks so much, Marcy. I knew of Jazz's work, but I didn't know of her death, and by suicide, no less. So thank you so much for highlighting that. And I fear that we'll see more suicides, right? We'll see more deaths, because this is really sad and hard and lonely and isolating and tragic and sometimes feeling hopeless time. So that is truly all Black everything. And I'm so glad that you highlighted her life and her death. Thank you.
So in TVT, we are going to talk a little bit about some of our faves. First, starting with Molly, or Yvonne Orji. We should probably stop calling her Molly all the time. And I actually we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that she was coming out with her stand-up, Mama, I Made It, on HBO, and it finally aired, and we got to watch it over the weekend. And I will say, I was very surprised at my ability to let go of her character as Molly and really embrace her as a stand-up comedian. It was so good and so funny, and I was just so tickled and so entertained, and just really happy for her. And I really appreciate it. So one of the things that I've realized now about comedians is that I really appreciate the personal aspects of it when they actually tell jokes about their family and about their backgrounds and their experiences in the world. And it is just a beautiful thing to see. And I did not know that she went to Howard. And so I got to learn all of these really wonderful things about her, and all these really wonderful things about her culture and background, and just being being an African woman in America, and being like that African American. That did not come out correct, I don't think, but I think y'all might get what I'm saying. Nigerian American, maybe that's more helpful. But just talking about that experience and that duality, just what that means, and then talking about being able to go back home and having these experiences with people on the streets of Nigeria that say that they know her, and then see her like, I have no idea who this person is. But then also talking about some of those shared experiences of your parents being really proud of you and being wanting to brag on you, wanting these really high or having these really high expectations of you, but then also being able to kind of accept who you are and where you get to and just take any level of success. So she didn't really have to be a doctor anymore, but she is on HBO. And so that level of success was absolutely acceptable and warranted for her, but also just like the banter and the rapport and the love that you can obviously tell that she shares with her parents was just a really beautiful thing. So I really enjoyed just seeing the jokes, seeing the cultural aspects, seeing the community and just the shared experiences of all folks across the African diaspora. So yeah, I just really enjoyed it. I laughed the whole entire time, and I would definitely, I'm not going to spoil any of the jokes for you all in case you haven't seen it. If you haven't seen it, I would definitely encourage you to check it out. What about you, Ashley? You said that you got to watch it as well. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. Me, a whole me, thought it was hilarious. And I really enjoyed it. Ivana is just really funny. She's just really funny. And the way she be shading her parents and the way her mama shade her about that, I don't know, was it bread or crackers or something she didn't bring? Mind you, she didn't buy her a Louis Vuitton purse, some bagels from, you know, the United States, all this stuff. And she's like, but where is the cucumbers or whatever I told you, girl? Like, she wasn't having, she don't care. If you don't get her what she wants, she's still salty. And I love that. I love seeing more of her family, and I look forward to future specials with her. I want the Ali Wong treatment. Like, I want, you know, 3, 4, 5 specials. Like, I love it, and I want to see more of it. I'm excited for her. And speaking of Molly, sounds like Andrew is over it. He has ended the relationship and feels like, yeah, girl, you're like nuts and I don't have time. And I agree. I mean, Molly is so self-centered. She's so selfish. She doesn't see the forest for the trees when it comes to her relationship. And, you know, she can't take criticism, right, in any way. Like, she just can't. You know, when corrected, she does not deal well, and she escalates things from here to there real quick. She does. She escalates so quickly. And that is terrible. And you know, I was disappointed in her. I was disappointed. I think Andrew is a great guy. I think that they could have worked out, but he is basically said he feels like they're on two different pages, and he's been patient and he's tried and he's done the work, but he's not putting it up with it anymore. And who can be mad? Like, who can be mad? And this, this season 4 finale was, listen, something for the ages. It truly was something for the ages. I really thought that they were going to let Issa and Lawrence work out. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm a fool. But I did. I thought that they were going to let that work out. I thought that they were going to let that rock. I thought that they were going to let that relationship you know, go in a positive area, go in a positive direction. And I love their banter at the farmer's market and just like, you know, seeing that and was so hopeful. And then to just see it crash and fall apart, I was really sad and really disappointed. I don't even know who to place the blame on. Maybe Issa for, you know, leaning into this relationship and believing that it could work, or Lawrence for deciding that he wasn't going to use condoms in a relationship that seemed to be over before it began, or Condola for also not protecting herself against a man who she's not even trying to be with, right? Like, you were just like, he's your fun boy, and then all of a sudden you get pregnant by him. Girl, like, what are we doing? We don't do that. We don't have babies by a guy that you're not even trying, like, you weren't even trying to be with him in any capacity. You told your friends he was some fun to play with, and now you want to have his child? I'm so confused by this. So again, I don't even know where to place the blame. I feel like everybody's a fool. And the only thing I can say, and I'm annoyed to even say this, but it seems like Tiffany came out on top this season. She has a very supportive husband and partner. And I'm grateful that, it's really amazing to see Black love. It's really amazing to see, you know, she has a husband who isn't sure how to support her through postpartum, but is committed to trying. And I think that he'll be able now to get her some help, the help that she needs, and hopefully she'll be able to be okay. So yeah, just this episode was a whirlwind. And I don't know, I have to ask you, Marcy, do you have any predictions? Like, what were your takes on season four, the whole season, this latest episode, and what do you expect for season five?
So, I had lots of feelings about Insecure. I think the one that gutted me the most, though, is condolences being pregnant. Like, I do not like that storyline. Actually, I kind of hate it because it is so irreversible. And I know that it's real, and I know it's valid, and I know that it happens. People have side babies all the time, blah, blah, yada, yada, yada. But, like, we've done this before, and we did this with the game. I just saw a post that apparently happened on a different world as well, and I just don't understand why that always has to be the narrative. Like, why does that have to be the sledgehammer? So I had lots of feelings and reactions to that. I am not surprised that Molly and Andrew are on the fritz, even though I don't know that they're necessarily going to break up. Like, I don't think that they're actually going to end their relationship, but it's definitely some things that Molly needs to work through. And so I hope that for next season, we see more of Molly on the couch. Maybe even Issa will get her a therapist bae and get to therapy as well. And I don't know, like, this whole, like, the whole thing with Condola and Issa and Lawrence, like, I really wanted Issa and Lawrence to do well. I don't think that Lawrence is capable of juggling a new job, a new city, a new resumed relationship with Issa and a baby, and a baby's mama. Like, I just don't see that happening. So he's going to have to let go of one. And unfortunately, I think that the letting go is going to be Issa. And because I don't want it. Like, what I don't want is Issa and Lawrence to get married and they just have another child. Like, I don't want that. Can we come up with something different? So hoping that that's not the case. But I do hope that Issa finds love and happiness, and maybe it just gives room for her and Nathan to be together, which I would allow because Nathan is fine and he is growing and he is doing amazing things. So hopefully we have an Issa-Nathan coming back together. Definitely hoping that Tiffany can recoup and get her some therapy. Everybody just needs to go to therapy. How about that? We just have a whole season of everybody being in therapy and then coming back together and having, like, fully functioning relationships. That's my prediction for season five. Season five is on the couch every single episode. Somebody is in a therapy session. And that's how I feel about Insecure.
Listen, I'm not mad at it. Everybody gets a therapist. Hit Oprah style. You get a therapist. You get a therapist. You get a therapist. Everybody needs it. Because these relationships and these people are in shambles. And I agree with you. I think the my side chick got pregnant or my before chick got pregnant trope is old. And the writers could have did better. Like, we saw it coming, girl. Y'all could have did better. So totally disappointed in that. But we'll be tuned in for next season. I guess that's the how it works in TV. They make you mad so you watch more. That's the whole trope. So I'll be there present and accounted for. And looking forward to it. So, but we hope that we don't disappoint you at School and Life. So thank you so much for listening to another episode. We're so grateful for our community. We're so grateful for you for listening. This week, do us a favor and share School and Life with somebody. Tag us on social, add us at School and Life Podcast on Instagram. Let someone know that you watch the show, that you love it, that you think we're hilarious and that they should watch or listen, excuse me, because they'll love it too. And just share it with someone. Share it with your sister friend. Share it in a group text. We love hearing, we love gaining new listeners and building, bringing other people into this community. So please share it with your community so we can add to the total community of listeners of School and Life. And thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week. School's out. Class dismissed.